Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, October 8th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy grants Idaho Governor Butch Otter's request for emergency stay of ruling allowing gay marriage in Idaho. Lewis Clark Chamber attendees split on minimum wage survey, and U.S. Forest Service reaches agreement with pro-snowmobile groups in lawsuit over use of Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest wilderness study areas. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Today, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy issued a stay of a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling finding Idaho's ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional. The emergency stay was requested by Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter yesterday, but the stay also covers Nevada. Yesterday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals threw out Idaho and Nevada's same-sex marriage bans. Justice Kennedy's stay requests responses from Idaho plaintiffs by the end of the business day tomorrow. It's possible the full U.S. Supreme Court could announce an extension of the stay Friday. Governor Otter issued a statement saying, "I'm pleased that Justice Kennedy has given us the opportunity to make our case in a way that helps avoid the confusion some other states have faced. We also asked the Ninth Circuit for the same relief, but I'm grateful that Justice Kennedy acted so promptly. I intend to be faithful to my oath of office and keep working to protect the Idaho Constitution and the mandate of Idaho voters in support of traditional marriage." County clerks around Idaho had been readying new gender-neutral marriage license applications, and couples around the state were getting ready to marry after yesterday's Ninth Circuit Court ruling. One of those couples were among the four lesbian couples who were plaintiffs in the lawsuit against Idaho, Shelia Robertson and Andrea Altmeyer. The Spokesman Review website reports Robertson and Altmeyer were first in line at the Ada County Clerk's Office at the Ada County Courthouse in Boise at 8 a.m. Mountain Time this morning. Robertson told the Spokesman Review, "I don't understand. I just want my life. I just want to marry the person of my dreams. I feel like a pawn in a game, to be honest, and I don't get it. It's my life, really. Come on. It's not going to hurt anyone." Altmeyer said the stay was disappointing after the Supreme Court decided not to hear appeals from opponents to gay marriage from five states Monday. The couple's attorney, Deborah Ferguson, said Justice Kennedy's stay comes as a surprise, and it's unclear to her why Kennedy issued the stay. Ferguson said she plans to file a response to the U.S. Supreme Court tomorrow by 5 p.m. Members of the Moscow area LGBT community have announced plans for a marriage equality rally tonight at 8:30 in Friendship Square. An email announcement from Gordon Mellott refers to Butch Otter's request for a stay, saying, "We reject this behavior and the harm brought to Idaho families. We are sick of money being wasted and families being harmed." The announcement requests people bring friends, signs, and candles to the rally at 8:30 p.m. tonight at Moscow's Friendship Square. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service last week listed the western yellow-billed cuckoo as a threatened species and has proposed critical habitat along the Big Wood River in southern Idaho. The Associated Press reports Blaine County Planning Director Tom Bergen said half the area is private ranch land already protected by conservation easements. Gary Wright of the Bureau of Land Management told commissioners the habitat designation could impact grazing on BLM land in the area, as well as guided fly fishing trips. The Idaho Mountain Express reports a 7-mile stretch of the Big Wood River near Bellevue is occupied by western yellow-billed cuckoos during breeding season. Police in Tennessee arrested a 22-year-old Pullman man on an interstate warrant for second-degree rape of a child. Jordan Turnus was brought back to Whitman County and arraigned Friday in Whitman County Superior Court in Colfax. Under state law, second-degree rape of a child is defined as when the victim is between the ages of 12 and 14 and the perpetrator is at least 36 months older than the victim. The alleged incident occurred in 2011. A Lewis Clark Valley Chamber of Commerce survey finds 66% of members who responded said Idaho's minimum wage is too low, and 64% felt Washington's minimum wage should stay the same. The survey comes as labor makes plans to lobby the Washington legislature to increase the minimum wage and bring it closer to a living wage, with some proposals as high as $13 an hour. The Washington minimum wage is now $9.32 an hour and will increase to $9.47 an hour January 1st when a consumer price index increase kicks in. Democratic State Representative John Roush of Lewiston, who listened to Washington Retail Association Government Affairs Vice President Mark Johnson argue against increasing the minimum wage at a chamber luncheon yesterday, said taxpayers end up subsidizing more government services when the minimum wage is low. John Roush told the Lewiston Tribune those making the minimum wage receive the equivalent of $4.75 an hour in government services that pay for food and health care. Inland Cellular Business Operations Director Mike Bly said the government is asking businesses to pay more than they need for labor. Johnson told the gathering the increase in the minimum wage in SeaTac caused employers to get rid of perks such as employee meals. He also said employers are also more likely to eliminate jobs and cut benefits when the minimum wage goes up. The Moscow City Council voted 5-0 Monday night to get rid of one of the restrictions on fences in city code that has been disproportionately impacting homeowners with corner lots. City planner Mike Ray explained the situation to the council.
Basically, the concern was that existing 6-foot-tall fences within street side yards were presenting some challenges for people that had those fences constructed within the 60s and 70s when we didn't have really any fencing regulations within the city. And so basically those homeowners are presented with the inability to replace those fences now that they're reaching an age where they're starting to deteriorate and they'd like to replace those within those street side yards. And so essentially the way our regulations work right now is that you have a front yard setback, which you can't place anything higher than a 3-foot-tall solid or 4.5-foot picket fence in. You also have a street side yard, and so this only comes into a play on corner lots. And so basically, a homeowner would have to place the fence back whatever the setback distance was in their front yard, and they'd also have to place the fence back whatever the setback distance was at the street side yard within those corner lots.
Moscow City Planner Mike Ray. Ray said staff researched fence rules in other nearby cities, including Spokane, and found none of them regulated fences the way Moscow does. The council held a public hearing on the issue Monday night, with one resident expressing a desire to have the fence restrictions relaxed. The vote Monday was to allow residents to build fences up to 6 feet in height upon obtaining an agreement with the city. The 6-foot fence limit does not apply within the parts of the city zoned industrial. The Moscow League of Women Voters will hold a candidates forum for November 2014 Latah County and Legislative District 5 candidates tonight. The forum will be held in the Great Room of the 1912 Center, which is located at East 3rd and Adam Streets in Moscow. It starts at 7 p.m. and is scheduled to wrap up by 8:30 p.m. The U.S. Forest Service has reached an agreement with the Idaho State Snowmobile Association and the Blue Ribbon Coalition, which would amend the Forest Service's 2012 travel management plan and lift bans on snowmobiles, motorcycles, and mountain bikes in some areas of the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest recommended for wilderness designation. The agreement, if approved by Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill, would settle a lawsuit filed by the groups against the agency, alleging the travel bans were influenced by unofficial internal policies that limited management options. The Forest Service disputed the allegation, but did concede that some guidance documents had been misapplied by some managers. If Judge Windmill approves the agreement, the Forest Service will reconsider the portion of the plan dealing with snowmobiles, motorcycles, and mountain bikes in recommended wilderness areas, and until new rules are written, allowed uses will revert to former rules. Idaho Conservation League spokesperson Brad Smith told the Lewiston Tribune, "Wilderness advocates will urge Windmill to reject the agreement because it amounts to a revision of the travel plan without public input." Washington teachers have largely paid legal fees for the long-running lawsuit that prompted the standoff between the Washington legislature and state Supreme Court over whether the state adequately funds education. So far, the McCleary case has cost the plaintiffs about $4 million in attorney's fees, while the state has spent about $2 million defending its position in the lawsuit. In 2012, the Washington Supreme Court gave the legislature until the 2017 to 2018 school year to reach a series of goals intended to make the state meet its constitutional requirement to fund basic education. The coalition of parents, teachers, and community groups that brought the suit argue the legislature is shifting an estimated $3 billion per year in school funding to local taxing districts. Washington Education Association spokesperson Rich Wood told the Associated Press teachers twice taxed themselves through the union in order to raise money to keep funding the lawsuit. Edmonds School District Superintendent Nick Brassoit said his district contributed about $40,000, which amounted to about a dollar per student. Brassoit said other districts contributed between 50 cents and a dollar per student, depending on what they could afford, although not all districts contributed. Attorney Tim Ahern acknowledged his firm, Foster Pepper, billed the network for Washington schools $500 per hour for his services, but also wrote off thousands of dollars of his time as pro bono work. Brassoit praised the Washington Education Association for not making a big deal of the extent of their contribution and called it an investment that will bring returns to the entire state. A Canadian National Railway Company freight train carrying petroleum distillate and other dangerous cargo derailed and caught fire in central Saskatchewan yesterday morning. The derailment, which occurred about 150 miles east of Saskatoon, caused an evacuation of about 50 people from the town of Clare, located less than a mile from the accident site. Officials warned residents smoke from the fire could be toxic. There were no injuries. There were two crew members on the train at the time. Railway spokesperson Jim Ferry said the fire was caused by two spilled cars of petroleum distillate. Petroleum distillate is a precursor to diesel, heating oil, kerosene, and jet fuel. Two other cars were carrying hydrochloric acid, and two cars were carrying caustic soda. The train originated in Winnipeg and was headed to Saskatoon. Responding to complaints over a resolution regarding Whitman County's Veterans Relief Fund, Whitman County Commissioners postponed a vote Monday until language in the resolution can be cleared up. Colfax resident Roy Lord, a volunteer responsible for distributing funds to veterans, expressed worry that the funding will only be given once. Lord said he was not notified in advance by the Veterans Advisory Board when they put the draft resolution on their agenda. Lord said, "I'm just here to make an impassioned plea for common sense." Lord and veteran Charles Clott both told commissioners a one-time payment of $2,500 in any given year could occur when in the past the county has handed out disbursements more than once. They say wording in the new draft makes it seem like only one $2,500 payment would be given. The original draft said there is a maximum of $2,500 per year. That yearly amount was defined as occurring once in the time frame between January 1st and December 31st of any given year. Lord asked what would happen during the rest of the year if a veteran receives money on January 1st. According to an account in the Daily News, Lord said, "These are people who can't manage money that are in dire need. I'm going to have to give the guy who needed $200 in utilities $2,500, and he can't manage it. I don't know what his needs are going to be for the next 364 days. Lord said every veteran he gave relief funding to last year needed that money more than once. Lord said, "You're going to affect 100% of the veterans who have been serviced over the last 2 years by limiting it to this once a year." Commissioner Michael Largent said, "I see no reason or case to limit it to one disbursement." However, the commission decided to table the measure since the resolution doesn't go into effect until January 1st. Largent and Commissioner Art Swanick were in agreement. The Veterans Advisory Board should make a final plan before the commission makes a final decision on the matter. The next Veterans Advisory Board meeting is scheduled for October 21st in Whitman County. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it'll be partly cloudy tonight with a low of 49. Sunny tomorrow through Friday with highs of 73 both days. Mostly clear Thursday night, low 47. Mostly cloudy Friday night, low 49. And a 30% chance of rain Saturday, 20% chance Saturday night. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, high 66, low 45, and mostly sunny on Sunday, high 61. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 70 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, you can buy raffle tickets for the 2014 JAMIS Citizen 2 bicycle that we are giving away October 23rd. Tickets are available at the KRFP studios. Best to buy them during the afternoon or evening. Also at Moscow Farmers Market on Saturdays, 8 a.m. till 1 p.m. Various events around the city, the KRFP website, and also from KRFP DJs. Coming up next, we have the weekly news magazine Between the Lines, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. At 7:30, we have the International Gay and Lesbian News Magazine, a weekly show called This Way Out. At 8 o'clock, World Music with World Waves, hosted by Catherine Bonzo. Grateful Dead Through the Decades at 9:30, and Bob Slacktime Funhouse at 11. Entertainment, information, and music throughout the evening here at KRFB Moscow Pullman. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 FM.